Welcome to Tentpole Trauma, the podcast where we look at movies that came with hype and high hopes, but left with crushing disappointment, either critically, at the box office, or both. Freed from the weight of expectations, we seek to examine these underperformers under a new light, parsing through the good, the bad, and everything in between with the hopes of gaining a better understanding as to why they failed to find their audience. Warning, there will be spoilers, so if you haven't seen the movie that we're discussing today, I suggest you stop the podcast and go watch it. Then when you come back and listen, you'll get more out of the discussion. On this episode, we discuss Wyatt Earp. I am Sebastian, and I'm here with Jennifer.
Hello.
We are here to discuss some Wyatt Earp with you today. But first, before we get into that, because we are discussing a Western film, I felt that I should plug my latest Hollow Jack novella, Hollow Jack and the Revenants of Barrel Rock. I released it late last month around Halloween.
I think it was on Halloween.
It was on Halloween. It's a supernatural Western tale with some zombie outlaws. And I think that if you've got yourself an e-reader and you want to read a fun supernatural Western story, you can't go wrong with a Hollow Jack.
You certainly can't. And I am pleased as punch to hear you promote Hollow Jack on here without me having to nag you to do it.
Yeah, you didn't even have to nag.
I didn't even have to nag. This is my favorite Hollow Jack story so far.
But there's only been two.
That's right. And I really liked the first one as well. But then I read this one and I liked it even more than the first one.
Well, thank you, darling. I'm getting better at them, I guess. But yeah, there'll be more Hollow Jack stories coming. I'm looking to, I think, write about five or six. Eventually, it'll be completed in one volume. But they're sort of these episodic novella stories, all dealing with supernatural occurrences. So
in the Old West.
In the Old West. And yeah, because I've become an old man and grown an affinity to the Old West, we're going to be discussing some Old West box office bombs.
That's right.
But we're also going to be doing a companion piece to this podcast, because if you know the movie Wyatt Earp, you know that it was released a mere 6 months after another Wyatt Earp movie, Tombstone. Now, in the 90s, this sort of thing seemed to happen a lot. Like, there'd be a volcano movie and then another volcano movie.
Dante's Peak.
That's right. And Volcano.
That's right.
There would be
Armageddon
and Deep Impact.
That's right.
The studios would just get wind of some big project happening, and then they would go and make their own version of it. Now, interestingly, with the movie that we're discussing for Tentpole Trauma and Tentpole Triumph this month, one of these Wyatt Earps was a big, fat, disastrous bomb, Wyatt Earp.
That's right.
And the other one, Tombstone, was a success. It's a little bit disingenuous to call it a tentpole triumph, because it wasn't like Tombstone brought back the Western or anything.
No.
But it was successful. It made more than it cost by a considerable margin.
And compared to Wyatt Earp.
Yes, which was a huge failure. And the beginning of Kevin Costner's like run of epic stories that were bombs. So let's get into Wyatt Earp. It's going to be hard not to bring up Tombstone here and there. So we're going to try not to.
Yes.
And save most of the Tombstone discussion for the Tentpole Triumph.
Yes.
this is going to be a lot more general too, because, you know, apologies to listeners. I know we haven't been putting out podcasts as much. November has been a really hectic month for us. We've been traveling and all sorts of stuff, all good stuff, but just there hasn't been a whole lot of time to podcast. So apologies, and we're doing our best.
Well, yeah, and we'll be back on track in December for sure.
That's right. We're not going anywhere.
We're not going anywhere. That's right.
Just podcasting.
Just podcasting. That's right.
So let's talk a little bit about Wyatt Earp. Interestingly, I learned while doing my Wikipedia research that this movie basically came into existence because of Tombstone. Originally, Kevin Costner was going to play Wyatt Earp in the movie Tombstone, but he was so dissatisfied with the script, he did not feel that it focused enough on the life of Wyatt Earp, and so he said, screw you guys, I'm going to make my own Wyatt Earp movie with Lawrence Kasdan, who had previously directed Silverado back in 1985, which was credited as sort of reviving sort of the Western genre a little bit in the 80s. That movie was a success, had a very young Kevin Costner in it. Lawrence Kasdan had previously done The Big Chill, and Kevin Costner isn't really in The Big Chill.
Well, he's the dead guy.
Exactly.
He's Alex.
Right. He apparently had more scenes in the original cut of The Big Chill, but they cut him out. So I think it was Lawrence Kasdan's way of sort of like paying Kevin back for a thankless role in his previous movie by giving him a part in Silverado. And kind of from there, Kevin Costner's career, after that, he's in The Untouchables. He becomes sort of a leading man, you know, Bull Durham later and all that, blah, blah, blah. Then Dances with Wolves happens, right? Which is like an epic Western. So that's kind of how we find ourselves in 1994 with Wyatt Earp. What was your sort of impression back in the day of, you know, Kevin Costner and the sort of like big 90s movies he was a part of?
Well, I've shared with you before that it was really when he and I thought, and I think you did too at first, that he had directed Wyatt Earp, because it just went with the narrative of where we're going with Kevin Costner movies. My friend Heidi, my dear friend that I've known since I was born, particularly in the 90s, had a real hatred for Kevin Costner. Well, not a hatred, I should say, but a real eye roll at like him and, you know, oh, I'm going to direct and produce and it's starring me. It's all about me. And she just, anyway, and she wasn't wrong. But I've always liked him. I remember, I think The Bodyguard was around this time too, wasn't it?
It was like 1990.
Yeah. And Robin Hood.
91.
Yeah. Those were the ones that I was more familiar with.
But you love JFK.
Oh, I do love JFK. I saw JFK in the theater and that was the first a three-hour film that I had ever seen, and it went by lightning fast, and I was just engaged, and I thought it was amazing.
You know what's a three-hour movie that doesn't go by lightning fast?
Wyatt Earp.
Yes. I have a weird relationship with Kevin Costner. I kind of love him, and I kind of hate him.
Yeah.
I don't know if I truly believe he's actually that good of an actor. Like, Kevin Costner, when he's good, is kind of wooden. You know what I mean? Like, it's like when Kevin Costner isn't wooden, he isn't very good. But when he's good, he's wooden. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just got this weird sort of appeal that doesn't have anything to do with him actually being that great of an actor. Like, if you think about it, like, when has Kevin Costner ever wowed you with his performance?
There's been no wowing, but I have enjoyed performances.
Yes, that's
what
I mean.
Yeah, but I've never been, like, blown out of the water. Like, you know, not to talk about Tombstone, but there's certain, you know, parts of Tombstone where there's actors in that film that kind of are blowing me away.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, you know, just because we're in, you know, in that wheelhouse right now. But yeah, there's nothing that Kevin Costner, I've enjoyed a lot of it. I enjoyed Field of Dreams that we watched not too long ago.
Yeah, he's great in that.
He's there's a lot of things he's really good in. But yeah, have I been blown away or wowed by something? No.
I mean, he's sort of the quintessential Midwestern kind of bland, mild-mannered guy. He plays basically a variation of that, you know, no matter what he does, to varying degrees of success. I do love this period, though, because it's such, like, kind of his fall from grace. I mean, it is, because he had this movie, which was a huge bomb. He has Waterworld, yep, a movie I love and has been on this podcast, which was not technically the hugest of bombs, but was very much considered a bomb. Like, it was called Fishtar, and like
Fishtar,
you know, it's, everyone thinks of Waterworld as being a huge disaster, and it definitely lost money. And then he makes The Postman, which I believe is even more of a financial failure than this. What it basically, like, he made Dances with Wolves. He thought he could do these, like, big epic quasi-Western-y type of movies, and he kept falling flat on his face.
And then he just also kept doing all these baseball movies, too. Like, he really seems to love baseball. Like, we had Bull Durham, and yes, then we have Field of Dreams, and then he does For the Love of the Game.
Yeah.
Ugh. But I will tell you one that kind of was under the radar that I saw in the theater. It was mid-2000s, called The Upside of Anger.
Uh-huh.
And he was really good in that. I think he was kind of an alcoholic neighbor of the lead character, who was Joan Allen, who was going through something, I think was like a death, or I can't remember exactly. But it was a different take on what he'd been doing, and it was good.
Not to go on too much of a tangent here, but I also enjoyed him in Mr. Brooks. Did you see that?
I tried to watch that, and I don't think I really liked that.
He plays a psycho.
Yeah, no, it was definitely on my radar, and I feel like I tried to watch that once streaming somewhere. I should give it another chance.
You know, I've enjoyed him since the 90s and stuff. Once his ego got sort of taken down a peg, he does some kind of interesting stuff. I recently watched him and another Western thing. I mean, I'm always happy to see him in some sort of Western setting. He was in a Hatfield's McCoy.
I know you liked that.
Miniseries, which I thought he was actually really good in. And I've heard he's really good in Open Range. I haven't seen Open Range yet, but I intend to at some point. Another Western with Robert Duvall, and he's supposedly really good in that. So I will watch that. But we're digressing. Let's kind of go back to 1994 and Wyatt Earp. Now, as I said before, this was directed by Lawrence Kasdan. Lawrence Kasdan famously wrote like Raiders of the Lost Ark. He wrote Empire Strikes Back. So, you know, big blockbuster movies of the early 80s.
Dreamcatcher.
Dreamcatcher, yes, which we've discussed on Tenfold Trauma. He directed that. He transitions into doing some directing. He directs Silverado and whatnot. But so, you know, it does seem like he would be an ideal sort of fit for this material. And Kevin Costner actually went to him after he was dissatisfied with what was going on with Tombstone and was like, you know, okay, Lawrence, you're going to make my Wyatt Earp movie with me. And that's how it happened.
I really kind of love that's how it happened. Like, this was kind of a revenge. I'm going to show you.
Yes.
We're going to do it better.
Yeah.
People want to know more about my character.
Yes.
Wyatt Earp, more about me.
Yes. I mean, your friend Heidi is completely right. Yes. It was like his ego just going way out of control.
Yeah.
That ego has even resurfaced to this day. He's having some issues.
On Yellowstone.
Yeah. And he's going through a messy divorce. So, you know, I think Kevin's got a pretty big ego, but it got taken down a peg after this trio of humongous failures, starting with Wyatt Earp. Let's just kind of get into the movie in just sort of chunks.
Yeah, let's start with Wyatt Earp and how we start with a young Wyatt Earp.
Well, okay, we do start with a young Wyatt Earp. And this movie, it should be said, as well as Tombstone, is stacked with famous actors.
Yes.
And the first part of it, I mean, this movie is going to be about Wyatt Earp. Like, Tombstone starts when Wyatt Earp shows up in Tombstone, Arizona, and the OK Corral and all that. This movie is like, nope, we are going back to the beginning. I mean, we don't see Wyatt Earp being born, but we might as well, because right? we get him as like a teenage boy yep. played by a teenager. Who's actually pretty good.
Yeah,
I thought that
I think
teenage
so.
Boy is good. Yes. Gene Hackman is here.
Is his dad.
Right. And Gene Hackman had been in Unforgiven, and he's in The Quick and the Dead. So, I mean, he's been doing a lot of Westerns around this time.
And Betty Buckley is his mom.
Betty Buckley is his mom. And it's just basically he's growing up in, like, Iowa or something, I believe. And he wants to go off to fight in the Civil War. His brother, Virgil, has gone off. Virgil is played by Michael Madsen in some pretty cheesy blonde hair dye.
I was reading in the trivia about Michael Madsen being cast as Virgil, and he had committed to this role, and he was offered to be Vincent Vega in Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
But he couldn't do it because he was doing this.
Yeah, I knew he was originally supposed to be Vincent Vega in Pulp Fiction, but, you know, we got John Travolta.
No, we got Travolta. It was great, but I'm sure, like, after this, what happened, and then Pulp Fiction was, you know, I'm sure there was some regret.
Yeah.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah.
We will say, just off the bat, like, one of the things that I do like about Wyatt Earp, and I definitely like things about Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, me too.
Is that it's got this like romantic, epic sweep to it. It's got this really epic score yep. to it by James Newton Howard with this really recognizable theme, which they hit a little bit too many times.
They hit it a lot.
But I like it.
Yeah.
Like, I do like that theme. It feels epic.
It's more like a Gone with the Wind type.
And that can be a good thing and a bad thing. And I think sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But when we get this set up with the family, you know, living wherever they are, and the young Wyatt and everything, like, these scenes are actually pretty decent. Like, basically just what happens is, like, Wyatt wants to go to the Civil War, but his dad won't let him. Dad's going to move them to California, even though, like, Betty Buckley doesn't want to move or whatever. But it's, you know, this whole thing about how family matters and blah, blah, blah.
Family sticks together more than anything. Like, it's really like, and they're like, yes, Dad. Like, this is something that Gene Hackman always says. So we're really getting that, like, family is really important.
And Wyatt sees somebody get gunned down in some sort of situation. So it's like introducing this idea of that, like, he's kind of being led into a life of violence, but he doesn't really have a full stomach for it.
Well, yeah, I think he barfs when he sees it happen.
Yes.
Remember, he runs off to the side of the building and throws up.
So, I mean, this first little section here, I think, is actually pretty good. Where things take a turn for the wrong is after this section. Like, for whatever reason, Wyatt doesn't go to California. He, like, stays in the territory and, like, becomes a stagecoach driver. So, you know, we get this exciting action scene where Wyatt's like driving a stagecoach, they're being chased by bandits or whatever,
and he's now Kevin Costner.
Right. It's like 7 years later in like Wyoming or something, and now this like teenage kid has grown into like 38-year-old Kevin Costner, but the movie wants us to believe that it's really like
20-year-old
Kevin Costner, and they've got this bad wig on him, and he's talking, kind of his voice is kind of higher up. He's like, golly gee whiz, or whatever. Like, he's trying to play like he's a younger man. This whole kind of section of the movie, like, I don't hate what the movie is doing.
Right, but it's very much distracting.
Yes.
Because it's like Clifford.
Yes, exactly. It's like, as you pointed out, watching Martin Short play like a little boy in Clifford. I mean, in fairness, he's supposed to be 20.
Sure, but Kevin Costner is clearly not 20.
No.
And, you know, whatever. I mean, the content, like you said, is not bad for this section of the film. You know, we're getting more of like how he's gone his path, and we're going to meet Ursula coming down the soon enough that we,
right.
you know, this is this world that he's in love with and whatever. So, I mean, a lot of things are coming up that are, you know, important. But yes, it's unfortunate that we could do it, like you said, there could be de-aging now that would work with that.
Yes.
Or at the time, like, maybe just have a different actor play the 20-year-old Wyatt Earp.
Well, and this is where Kevin yes. Costner's ego seems yeah. apparent, right?
I can do it.
Yes.
I look young enough.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and it's like these moments where you feel his ego in there and you're like, Kevin, you know what? And it's not just that he looks silly. He's kind of acting badly.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to act like a younger man,
person.
And he's talking in a certain way like he's naive yeah. or whatever. Once he settles into a middle-aged Wyatt Earp,
it's fine. It's yeah, good.
I think he's yeah. actually quite good.
Oh, yes.
Like, I think he actually gets into some interesting territory in terms of the mythology of the character and all that. But in these scenes, it's bad. He's been promised to Ursula.
Not promised to her. He's just decided that's who he's fallen in love with.
Right.
He's like, I looked at her like, you know, many times and finally she locked eyes with me or whatever. And, you know, so yeah, he's like all about going back to make that happen.
Ursula's played by Annabeth Gish.
That's right.
And, you know, they get a little home together somewhere. And, you know, he's talking about how, like, oh, he spent time out west and it's, you know, he thinks it's this exciting place. And she's like, well, should we move out there? And he's like, no, no, I'm happy here with you. All I need is to be here with you in Missouri is
yes.
where they are.
Yes.
But then she contracts
typhoid.
Exactly. And basically dies horribly. And he's so distraught about it, he like burns down their whole house.
He sure does. And then he goes off on the bender of all benders.
That part's fun.
That part is a good time because he is just like a pickled man.
Yeah.
Just so filthy and just like scoundrelly and just doing all sorts of things that could get him killed.
Yeah.
Because like you pointed out, because you know Westerns, when he like stole a man's horse, you're like, that will get you hung.
He accosts this one man in the street who's sort of well-heeled. And he's like, can I have some money? And the man's like, you're no good drunken reprobate, but I will arrange for you to have a meal if you follow me. And then he just basically like rolls the dude
yeah.
and like takes his money. And then steals his horse. And
then sells his horse.
Yes.
And as he sells the horse, like he's like offers the guy he's selling the horse to like a pull of his whatever he's drinking, whiskey, I guess. And the guy's like, no thanks. And he's like, well, shrugs his shoulders and stumbles off and just is guzzling his booze.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. He really looks like a classic sort of hobo there yes. for a minute, too. Like just the way they've costumed him in this. And then eventually dad comes and bails him out. Gene Hackman gets him out of jail and tells him to get on his horse and keep on riding. And that sort of gets us into sort of the meat of the movie where we're back in the West and, you know, he's becoming the Wyatt Earp gradually that we are going to know. It's sort of surprising that Gene Hackman is, that's it.
That's it.
That's all he's in the movie.
Yeah. Well, then we get to where he's, in the buffalo trade. My least favorite part of this movie is this just awful.
I do feel it's weird to have a movie that has Tom Sizemore and Michael Madsen in
yes.
it.
Yes.
They seem to almost cancel each other yes. out. It's like usually pick them for the same role. I feel like this movie has a lot of that kind of casting where you're like, Bill Pullman, like, couldn't he also play one of the brothers?
Yes.
But, like, no, he's playing this other guy.
Brother to Tom Sizemore.
Brother to Tom Sizemore, who he gets involved in this buffalo skinning business.
Yes.
And there's this really gruesome scene so where gross. They're skinning buffaloes. And you can tell these two guys are, like, they don't really have experience with it. They're
no.
like, oh, this is way nastier than we thought.
Yeah, there's flies. It's just the whole thing is just awful. These buffalo are just out there roaming, minding their own business. And it's just a mass slaughter just for their stupid hides.
Yeah, and so one thing that I'm going to sort of bring up that I think is kind of interesting about this movie is that it's not really interested in presenting Wyatt Earp as this, like, infallible hero. Tombstone tries to make Wyatt Earp seem like, you know, he's got some complications, but he's still the good guy. Where in this movie, as it goes on, Wyatt Earp isn't that good of a guy.
No, he's not. Because after he leaves, he parts ways with these brothers because he's going to I don't remember. Did he know what he was going to go do next? He did. Was he going to Tombstone next? Or no, what was he doing next?
No, he ends up in Dodge City.
Okay.
And he becomes the
law there.
The law there.
Yeah, but the brothers didn't want to join him.
They do, though. They come back later. Around.
They come later.
And I mean, that's sort of true of Wyatt Earp's life. Like, yeah. He, you know, kind of goes from thing to thing and sort of ends up in places. I think, you know, at one point he's tracking the outlaw Dave Rudabaugh, and that's where we meet Doc Holliday, who,
right.
Of course, is this, like, super important figure in the Wyatt Earp mythology. I mean, Doc Holliday is a myth and a legend of his own. And we're going to be talking a lot about him in our discussion of Tombstone, but in this movie, he's also very important, and here he's played by Dennis Quaid. And I should say that when I was working at the Nickelodeon Theater in Boston in the 90s, this movie played at the Nickelodeon. So I saw this movie before I ever saw Tombstone.
Okay.
Tombstone was not considered as arty.
Right.
So it played at a different theater, and I didn't see it at the time. I didn't end up seeing it until much later. But I did enjoy this movie, and I really liked Dennis Quaid's portrayal of Doc Holliday. Having not seen Val Kilmer, who I would argue gives more of a movie star mm-hmm. performance, but Dennis Quaid is no slouch in this role.
No, talking about performances that wow you,
yeah,
this is one of Dennis Quaid's best, I think, for sure. Funnily enough, I saw Tombstone in the theater, but I didn't see Wyatt Earp until later on, like VHS or on TV or something. I did not see the arty one.
You had the opposite experience.
Yes, I had the complete opposite experience. I think Dennis Quaid is, I was reading, he lost 30 pounds for the role.
It looks it. He yeah. looks emaciated. They try to make Val Kilmer look emaciated in Tombstone, and he's thin, but he's not emaciated like
no, like
Dennis Quaid
is. Looks painfully thin.
Yes.
I mean, he looks really sickly. And he's just, you know, again, we're not going to talk too much about Tombstone, but it's a different take on Doc Holliday. But I think he does a really great job of portraying him.
He's much more cantankerous mm-hmm. and curmudgeonly. He has his girlfriend, Big Nose Kate, in a thankless part by Isabella Rossellini. She only has like two scenes. She's got one scene with him when Wyatt first meets him, and then there's another scene where they're like fighting in a hotel room.
Right.
And that, and she's pretty much gone from the movie.
I'd also just like to point out that this role of Big Nose Kate, that Kate does not have a big nose.
Well, in Wyatt Earp, she says, I know it's my nickname. My nose isn't that
right.
big.
Okay.
They don't say anything about it in Tombstone, yeah. but she mentions that okay. in Wyatt Earp. But yeah, I mean, Isabella Rossellini is great in the little few scenes that we see her in, but she's barely in the movie. And it's really about Dennis Quaid's performance. He's playing Doc very much as a Georgian kind of gentleman, but he's obviously a gambler. He's a, you know, something of a scoundrel. He's a killer, you know,
yeah.
So less showy than Val Kilmer, but I think equally as good yep. in its own way.
Agreed. So this in Dodge City is where we're going to meet Maddie, who's played by Mare Winningham.
He's gone to Dodge City because is it his brother or his friend? And I forget the actor. The actor's not like a well-known guy, but I think he's playing one of his brothers, but he's like running a saloon. I think it's James.
Okay.
Who's not even in
not
Tombstone.
Not even in Tombstone, so it's confusing.
It's confusing, yeah. But it's another brother. And Jo Beth Williams is married to him.
Uh-huh.
But it really just becomes about these four women, in a sense. Like, they become this almost united front. Basically, they don't like that, you know, Wyatt is more or less controlling the brothers and controlling all of their fate. But it also establishes this thing where, like, the brothers just kind of end up marrying prostitutes,
yeah.
essentially. And, like, you know, Wyatt is so heartbroken over Drusilla, right?
Right.
He doesn't want to marry, but he's sleeping with Mayor Winningham's Maddie, right from the get-go, he's telling her, like, I'm not gonna
marry you.
You know, this is just, you know, I like you, you know, this is fine and everything.
No, he's trying to pay her and she doesn't want to take the money. She yes. wants this to be something else. It's such a, like, this person is telling you who he is.
Yes.
He is telling her who he is all along. He's not promising her anything. And she's just hoping for the best. And he does end up marrying her, obviously, because they, you know, they're there or whatever, and she's with the other wives. But he's never committed or really, you know, emotionally available. You can just tell it's going to go badly.
In this version of the story, Maddie becomes addicted to laudanum, basically because she learns that Wyatt is falling in love with this actress, Josie, played by Joanna Goyng, in this movie.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about Josie yeah. again in the Tombstone conversation yeah. too, because Josie is the one that Wyatt ends up with and they stay together right. until the rest of his life. He finds love again.
Sure. But he's also really not being discreet at all. Like, no. completely shacking up with her.
Well, he's being kind of a fucking dick almost, like, across the board.
Yeah.
And he's really bad to the women in general. Like, yeah. whenever they try to talk to him about something, he's just like, are you done yet?
He basically said, wives don't matter. Yeah. Wives come and go. They leave or they die.
Yeah.
He says that at one point.
He's a really, really hard man. And I mean, Catherine O'Hara as Allie even says it to his face, like, you are a hard man, mm-hmm. Wyatt Earp. But he is. But I mean, you know, while this is all going on, he's becoming this, you know, famous lawman.
Yep.
He's sort of fallen into this role of being the lawman in Dodge City. Like, they're trying to force all the people that come in to give up their firearms, you know, and that's a big deal in the Old West. And so there's a lot of pushback in that, a lot of skirmishes. His two buffalo skinning buddies show up and they want to become lawmen in Dodge City. And at that point, Wyatt is, like, tired of it and wants to move on. In both versions of the story, they really highlight that, like, yes, Wyatt spent time as a lawman, and he was an incredibly effective one, to the point, like, that when he later goes to Tombstone, they immediately want him to be a
that's
lawman
right.
because he's Wyatt Earp. But, like, that's not his dream.
No.
That's not what he wants to do. He just happens to be good at it.
Well, he doesn't even really know what he wants to do, but that's definitely what he doesn't want to do.
And so, yeah, these two guys show up, one of them played by Bill Pullman, the other played by Tom Sizemore, and they're like, you know, we want to take over here in Dodge City. And Wyatt's basically like, you don't have what it takes. I mean, to Bill Pullman, he's like, you're too affable. And, it, you know, he proves it at one point. Tom Sizemore and Bill Pullman, like, go on a, like, patrol or whatever down the street. And there's a drunk guy with a gun, as there always is. And, you know, Wyatt's sort of, like, tailing behind just to see if they can pull this off. Bill Pullman just starts like talking to the guy, and Wyatt Earp just comes up behind the guy and, like, pistol whips him. And Bill Pullman's like, why did you do that? And then Wyatt Earp shows him that the guy had a Derringer
yep.
in his palm and was about to shoot him.
Yep.
And he's like, you talk too much. And later on, sure enough, the Bill Pullman character is going to be shot and
yep.
killed in Dodge City. And Wyatt has to, like, go back and take over for him again.
Yep.
I mean, like a real life, this movie sort of meanders around, whereas, like, Tombstone is much more of, like,
boom, a movie. Yeah.
Like, things happen in a much kind of more, like, clearly sequential, like, events. This one feels more like they're really trying to tell an accurate version of Wyatt Earp's life.
Yeah, in 3 hours.
So the running time is definitely an issue. It's like, I get why it is as long as it is.
Yeah.
Considering the story that they're trying to tell. But at the same time, there's some big chunks that don't work. And so you find yourself wishing they would just cut those things out.
Yes.
But anyway, I mean, at this point, Wyatt Earp is basically Wyatt Earp. Kevin Costner's not wearing any wigs.
Nope.
There's a cool shot where we see him with the iconic Wyatt Earp, like, mustache.
Yep.
You know, he's settled into the look. And, yeah, I mean, I guess we can just talk about the whole Tombstone and OK Corral biz.
Yeah.
So the deal is, and I always found this interesting, and this is in both tellings of the story, this group of cowboys mm-hmm. who call themselves the Cowboys
yep.
sort of become like almost mafia mm-hmm. of the Old West. They wear these red sashes and they just kind of consider themselves
above the law. They kind of say it in the narrative, something like that, you know, this is the first kind of organized crime.
And so they're going to become this sort of major antagonistic force. Wyatt and his brothers all move to Tombstone, Arizona with the hope of getting rich, really. Mm-hmm. It's become a silver mining boom town. There's gambling and stuff going on there. We'll see a little bit more of how they get into that in Tombstone, the movie, actually. In this movie, they sort of touch upon it, but it seems like in this movie, they more quickly kind of just get drawn into becoming the law again.
Yeah.
There's like the sheriff who's like the county sheriff, who's this young guy in this movie played by Mark Harmon.
That's right.
He's sort of on the side of the cowboys, yep. basically. Like, he knows that they're like operating above the law, but he's like kind of their guy
yep.
in a sense. But he's trying to sort of like maintain the peace. But there's this older sheriff who's like, you know, the guy nobody takes seriously, but he's the law. He's trying to get people to hand over their guns and whatnot. And Curly Bill, who I don't remember the name of the actor in this movie.
He was the one that I was saying looks like Steve Coogan a little bit.
He totally does look like Steve Coogan. He's got a good like villain face.
Yeah.
But he ends up shooting the old sheriff in this movie pretty brutally because he shoots him at really close range. You know, the sheriff's trying to get him to hand over his guns and Bill does this trick move with his hands and then actually shoots the sheriff and you see like the sheriff's like chest catches on fire.
Yeah, that was score when I was like score one for Wyatt Earp. Haven't seen that in a Western before.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal, and I'm sure that's accurate. I mean, if you were shot that close to your clothing with a gun, I'm sure it would ignite your clothing. And I'll say this about like Wyatt Earp, just the way these events are staged seems much less like movie-like.
Yeah.
Than Tombstone.
Yeah.
Like when these things are staged in Tombstone, it's like in the middle of the town.
Right.
And it feels very much like a Western
like
movie. Whereas in Wyatt Earp, these things tend to happen in like smaller spaces.
Yep. He was like,
in like alleyways
and
behind
he was like, just go
the
home,
main
I'll
street.
Handle this. And it's like, I was like, this has got to go.
That's
really
right.
Bad.
Yeah. Yes. But I appreciate the way there's a sort of realism to just the way things are staged, that it doesn't feel like you're on the set of a movie
yes.
as much. You feel like you're kind of getting a glimpse into the real world of the Old West, you know. You're in these spaces that aren't typically the sort of spaces that you'll see in an Old West movie. Even the OK Corral in this movie, it doesn't even look like a corral. Like, they end up just going into this weird back alley area that's by the corral or whatever.
A couple things. One is the guy's name, Curly Bill Brocas,
mm-hmm.
is Lewis Smith, is who that actor is. And he's known for the Buckaroo Banzai film.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm not that familiar with.
Me neither.
Yeah, but that's kind of what he's known for. We should also mention that another one of his gang of the cowboys is Adam Baldwin.
That's right.
We didn't mention earlier Wyatt has a fight with Martin Cove.
That's right.
Wyatt Earp was working kind of like as a referee or something
right,
for like
boxing.
A boxing match.
Correct.
And so he was like, you don't know anything about calling a
he
match.
He made a bad call yeah. and Martin Cove lost his money.
Yeah.
Betting. This is when we're in young
right.
phase.
This is when the bad wig.
But then, yeah, he calls him out later at the saloon and Wyatt like hits him in the chest with a cue ball.
Yes, from playing pool.
Yeah.
Like, well, no, it was the chest or even maybe the throat.
The
I mean,
throat
he was gasping
something.
For air. It was
yeah.
pretty gnarly.
And that's just basically to show like,
don't fuck with Wyatt.
Don't fuck with Wyatt.
yeah.
You know, he's going to one day be a lawman that's going to be someone you would not want to fuck with.
That's basically. Right. But yeah, not to go backwards, but there were just a couple notable villains along the way.
Right. Yeah. You can't not talk about Martin Cove.
That's right.
We're building all up here to the OK Corral. You know, his brothers are there. They've been deputized. In this movie, I forget the name of the actors, but, you know, the notable one is Michael Madsen.
Michael Madsen is, I think he's Virgil, right?
He's Virgil. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's, I don't remember who, it's Morgan is the other, it's his name is Lyndon Ashby. I wouldn't have known that ever.
He's a character actor. Yeah. He's somebody you recognize his face, but he's just not that well known.
And then James Earp is David Andrews.
That's right. And like Jim Caviezel's going to show up later.
Very young.
Like another Earp
That's
brother.
Right. Yeah.
It's a little hard to track the Earp brothers in this movie. In Tombstone, it's much clearer. There's three of them. In this movie, I'm like, oh, is there another Earp?
Yeah.
And what about that Earp?
So many Earps.
There's a lot of Earps.
Also, another villain is Jeff Fahey.
Oh, yes. Jeff Fahey is playing Ike Clanton. And Ike Clanton is a very important character in the story. In Tombstone, he's going to be played by Stephen Lang. And there's a similarity between Stephen Lang and Jeff Fahey.
Absolutely.
Like, I feel they're comparable casting choices. Like, you could kind of switch them in, you know, either movie and it would still work. But yeah, Ike is like the instigator.
Yeah.
You know, Curly Bill's like sort of the leader. In Tombstone, we're going to get Johnny Ringo, who's not even in this movie, as far as I can tell. If he is, he's not named.
Nope.
But like, Ike is like the instigator. He's kind of the troublemaker. He's a drunk. He starts fights and whatnot. And, you know, he's the one in both movies that's like, this isn't over.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always that guy who's just going to really push it and push it and push it.
No, he's a shit starter. And he's also a full on coward at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. He just like runs his mouth. He's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And causes trouble and is, you know, a big part of the inciting incidents that happen. But he's like a complete pussy.
So, yeah, we're basically at the big OK Corral scene, which I remember at the time this movie came out. This was sort of the part of the movie that was the most notable. I mean, it's the most notable event in the story of Wyatt Earp. It's in, you know, a big deal in both movies. And I will say that I really like the way Lawrence Kasdan shoots this setup to the OK Corral. It's funny because, you know, I don't want to compare the two movies too much, but the approach to this event is handled distinctly different in both movies. Kasdan really goes for suspense.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? It's all about like, okay, the gang is at the corral. Ike's been saying that they're going to kill the Earps, so they've got to move now, right? Three of the brothers are getting ready to go. They're heading out the door. Doc Holliday shows up and he's like, hey, what you guys doing? Like, at first, like they ask, is Doc coming? And Wyatt Earp's like, no, Doc, let him sleep. Like Doc's asleep. But like, then they're heading out the door and Doc's there. And he's like, what's going on? You know, what you guys up to? And they give Doc a shotgun and tell him to hide it in his coat. And they just like head down the street, and it's the way it's filmed. It's like you follow them the whole way down, and you can just feel it from like the way the town is behaving.
Everybody's watching.
Yeah, it's super suspenseful. I love the lead up to it.
Yeah.
You know, in both movies, you know, you get these sort of shots. At this point, they're all kind of, the lawmen are all wearing these black coats and they look pretty badass. Like, you wouldn't want to fuck with these dudes. And they've got creepy Doc Holliday now tagging along. I mean, if you have any interest in the Wyatt Earp story, like, this is the point that's just iconic. You know, I'm sure in real life it looked nothing like this and wasn't this cool, but this is very cool. And then in this movie, when they actually get to the shootout, it's kind of just chaotic.
Yeah.
And you don't really fully register what's going on.
It's total chaos. You don't know who's getting hit or how bad they are getting hit. Like, what's fatal? I mean, it's just, I think it's kind of how it would happen. It would just be just, I mean, it's not choreographed. It's not slick.
Yeah. In Tombstone, it's much more of a classic movie style shootout. But in this movie, I appreciate how realistic it feels. It's messy.
Yes.
You don't even know if people are dead.
Yeah.
Virgil gets his arm shot up really bad. I think another brother gets his knee shot out or something. Two of the gang members are killed during this, one of them being Adam Baldwin. Yep. And, you know, this ends up in this next kind of creepy scene where they have a funeral for the dead gang members and they like do a parade through the center of town with like banners that say murdered in the streets of Tombstone.
That's right.
I mean, and that's a cool detail. It's in both movies as well, but I think that's like a really interesting, haunting detail. And it's cool because, you know, at that point, the brothers are like, did we just fuck this all up? It's interesting because you rarely see in Westerns this kind of like fallout. You're just assuming you're with the heroes and the heroes have done this thing and, you know, it's all going to be fine now. But it's like, no, it's not going to be fine. This is more complicated than that. I mean, the cowboys are bad. That's for sure. They are bad guys. You know, they are causing problems in the town and whatnot.
Well, the Earp brothers and Doc Holliday did go to just take the weapons away from the cowboys.
Yes.
Like that was the intent, was like, we want your, you know, drop your guns, whatever, we're going to take them. And it just, you know, everything went to shit.
Right. And the Mark Harmon sheriff's like, no, it's no problem. I already disarmed them. Yeah. And they're like, right.
No, you didn't. So now, this funeral happens. You can tell that the Earps are not feeling good about things.
Yeah.
Because it's like, there's going to be retaliation. There's going to be vengeance.
And there is. Uh-huh. The cowboys come back at the Earps and...
they pick them off.
Most dramatically with Morgan, he gets shot, like sniped while playing pool.
That's right.
It's a little bit more like dramatic in Tombstone, the way it's staged. In this movie, it's kind of just more matter of fact. But in both cases, he's shot while playing pool and dies on a pool table.
Yep. And Virgil is outside in this film, and this kid runs up and is like, oh, you got to go, you know, something's going on with Morgan or something like that, to get him. And I think the kid's obviously working with the gang.
Yeah.
And then he walks by like this, it looks like kind of an empty building or something that's under construction or something. And they're in there hiding and they just like shoot him up too. But he lives. You get a lot more of wife hysteria in this.
Yes.
And this is when, you know, people are just like, he's going to lose his arm and you know, everyone's like, and then of course, Morgan's dead and it's bad.
And so they basically got to get the family out of Tombstone. I do like the scene where Wyatt's trying to get Maddie, who's like completely fucked up on laudanum, like trying to get her on the train. And she's like, how's it that you haven't ended up getting shot or whatever? Because like one of the interesting things about the Wyatt Earp myth is like throughout all of this, he never is even grazed by a bullet.
That's
like from reality.
Yeah.
Like, despite being in all these crazy shootout situations, he never gets hit by a bullet. But she pulls a gun on him and like
tries to shoot him.
She's so
fucked up. She just, you know, misses him completely. She also had tried to kill herself earlier.
Right.
Like, we get way more dramatic Mayor Winningham, like just wanting to die and having contentious moments with the Josie character.
Yes.
Like calling her a whore and
a hebe whore.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, they're really laying into like, it's all sorts of slurs.
Yeah. Anti-Semitic slurs because Josie is Jewish.
That's right.
Oh, and creepy Mark Harmon like has a nude picture of her and is like showing it around.
Well, because I think he had been her fiance.
It
just in general, we get a lot more suffering from the Maddie character in this telling of Wyatt Earp, I feel. You know, she's trying to kill herself. She won't go. Like, everyone's going to California to take Morgan home to be buried. And she's just like, I'm not going. You know, I'll be dead or whatever. And she was like, you don't care. And he was like, not anymore.
No. Yeah. He's like, no, I don't.
No, I don't. It's just, he's a hard man.
Yeah. I mean, the women definitely get way more character in this version of the movie. I mean, there's more time to give them more character.
Yeah.
And I do have to say that I prefer the Joanna Goyng version of Josie to the Dana Delaney.
Yeah.
So, he gets them all on a train and we get this sort of suspense sequence where they're actually taking the train and they're passing through Tucson. But the gang is waiting there at the train station in Tucson. So we get the sort of cat and mouse scene where he gets one guy down. At this point, the younger brother has shown up to take the body home.
Young Jim Caviezel.
And during this sequence, he's like, I'm going to help you, Wyatt. Like, I'm going to go out there and get the guys with you. And Wyatt tries to discourage him from doing this, but he insists. Wyatt guns down the guy that shot Morgan and then like stands over him and empties his gun chamber.
Yeah. And then you see Jim Caviezel looking on in horror.
Yeah. And I mean, basically from there, it's, you know, the family gets away and Wyatt and Doc go after the rest of the gang. There's just a bunch of scenes with them sort of chasing after the gang and having conversations between them. We don't have to go over all of it. There's a cool sequence where like they're at some sort of like rocky, ridgy area and there's a big shootout and they're sort of visualizing how Wyatt's shooting all these different guys and they're none of them are hitting him. Like their bullets are like going through his coat and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, playing into that myth of like he never even got grazed by a bullet. But, you know, basically, you know, Wyatt tracks down the rest of the gang and he tells Doc to go to a sanitarium in Colorado and, you know, live out what's left of his life.
It's not as deep as the other film.
Yeah.
He goes off to, I think it was like Glenwood, Colorado or something like that, to the sanitarium because of his tuberculosis.
Yes.
And then we see Joanna Goyne and Kevin Costner on a 17 years later.
Yes.
On like a ocean liner heading to Alaska.
Yeah. I do like the way they end the movie. Because, yeah, they're on this ocean liner going to Alaska. They're older. And she's talking about some sort of gold that they're going to get. I didn't quite understand what that whole conversation.
I don't know if it was real or fantasy or whatever. But, you know, they're kind of playfully talking about it. And he's like, yeah, it's right over there. She's like, oh, that's just a one-day excursion. And he's like, yeah, we'll just have to figure out how to drag it all back, you know, out of the mountains or whatever. And then Mackenzie Astin comes up as a young man and he's like, excuse me, are you Wyatt Earp? And he goes into this story about how he had saved his uncle and that's what his dad had told them. And we see like a retelling of a flashback as to what had happened.
Yes. And his uncle, played briefly by John Doe of band X, is in jail. This is when Wyatt, you know, was the marshal or whatever. This mob is coming to inflict mob justice on this prisoner, this guy's uncle. But Wyatt Earp has been charged with protecting him, so he's going to protect him. And Wyatt Earp comes out and faces down this like huge mob
with torches.
Torches, I mean, and everything.
Yeah, a real mob.
Well, that's how they did it back
the
day.
That's right.
It's a cliche for a reason. And so Wyatt Earp just basically points two guns at the crowd and he's like, okay, yeah, you know, you can take me. It'll be no problem. But I'm going to shoot you first. So, and like, he names them, like, he knows the guy's name. So he's like, but first I'm going to shoot you. And then I'm going to shoot you to another guy. And like, I'll probably get about 10 of you before you get me. Yeah. So, I mean, it's something that we've seen in other movies.
Yeah.
But that is true. Like, psychologically, that's how you get to a mob, is you make them individuals.
You personalize it. You take the power out of the mob itself. And so he diffuses the situation. Everyone just turns around and leaves.
He doesn't even break a sweat doing it. And that's why he is the legend.
I think he said, you know, how is your uncle? And Mackenzie Astin's like, well, you know, he got killed somewhere else. So he wasn't really maybe worth saving or whatever. Yeah. But he was like, but nevertheless, you know, it's an honor to meet you. And you know, because he was doing what he was supposed to do.
And then, you know, Wyatt turns to Josie and he's like, some say it didn't really happen that way. And she's like, no, it did.
Yeah.
Meaning he knows the truth of what the story is. But she's like, the truth is the story.
Right.
Like, that's the truth. And I think that's a nice way for the movie to end, because the movie's telling you, this is a movie. This wasn't really probably exactly true. But what's important is that the story remains the story.
Right.
I actually think the movie wraps up pretty well that way.
I think it wraps up better than Tombstone does.
I would agree with you. But before we go on to discuss our patron exclusive conversation of Tombstone, which you can become a patron and hear if you're interested in hearing, Why do you think this failed?
Well, because Tombstone came out 6 months prior and was a smashing success. You know, unless you're a Wyatt Earp enthusiast and you were like, I want to know more about Wyatt Earp, you probably weren't going to go to the theater to see another retelling of Wyatt Earp.
A three-hour retelling.
Right. It's just at that time, if you were going to, you know, choose a movie to go to, you're going to choose the one that's the hit.
You know, in some cases, cinema can sustain two movies that are almost exactly alike and they can both be hits. But I think in the 90s, you're talking about Wyatt Earp movies and Westerns in general. I mean, Westerns haven't been in fashion since the 1960s. So it wasn't going to happen twice. Lightning was not going to strike twice when it comes to Wyatt Earp in that close succession.
There was only room for one Wyatt Earp.
If Kevin Costner didn't have such a giant ego, he would have probably been able to realize that and been like, well, Tombstone's going to come out first. My movie's not going to do that well. Then why bother even doing it?
Or do it later or something. Like, it's timing is everything, you know, like if you're not first, you're last.
Yeah.
This could have happened a couple years later and maybe that would have had more of a chance for people to see it, but not 6 months after Tombstone came out.
Yeah. And I think Kevin's ego was the driving force of that happening.
Now, knowing from your research that how all of this went down, 100%. This was like, I'm going to make its movie and I'm going to make it better.
All right. Well, I'm going to go chug some laudanum, put on a wig and make myself look 20 years younger and skin a couple dozen buffalo.
No. Gross.
That about does it today for Tentpole Trauma. If you like what you heard, check out our social media presence on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just look for Tentpole Trauma. That was easy, wasn't it? If you like us, hit subscribe and leave us a sterling review on iTunes, if you dare. If you really like us, head over to patreon.com and get involved in one of our fabulous tiers. You'll be glad you did. Want to communicate with Tentpole Trauma? Send an email to tentpoletrauma@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And who knows, one day you may even get your email read on one of our shows. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.